Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents...
Chrissy Teigen referred to Donald Trump as a pussy-ass bitch.
Look, he's a sick puppy. He shouldn't be there.
Well, I lost half a day of skiing.
I'm going to punch him out and I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to be happy.
The Betches Sub-Podcast.
A speaker has not been elected.
Hello, this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. I'm Amanda Duberman, the news director at Betches.
I'm Elise Morales, comedian and writer of the Betches Up newsletter.
And I'm Millie Tamaris, comedian and sub video contributor.
We will start, as always, today with a number. Today's number is 893. That is how many episodes of the Betches Up Podcast we've recorded so far, and we have some announcements to start the show today. This podcast will be going on hiatus for the rest of the year as of September 28th. Millie and Elise will be stepping away from this podcast, and they can share with us more about why.
It was definitely a really tough decision, and a lot of different things went into it, not the least of which was I started out at Betches as a freelance writer. I started writing the newsletter before the 2016 election. I continued doing that into becoming a full-time employee at the office. That's when we started the podcast. I stayed on with the podcast and the newsletter through the Trump administration, through leaving full-time at the office. And as I was making decisions about my future and the rest of this year and where I want to go creatively, I just realized, staring down at another election cycle, that for me, the best thing to do was to step away. And I'm so grateful to all of the people who have let me joke about the news for them for so many years. And I have a lot of really fun and exciting things coming up, but I'm really looking forward to being able to spend this next election as an observer and not necessarily a commentator. So just again, thank you to every single person who's listened all these years, who's listened some of the years, who's read the newsletter. I'm still alive and a person. You can follow me on socials. I've got really fun, exciting things coming up. And yeah, I just hope that we can stay connected there. For those who are subscribed to the newsletter, I'm also stepping away from the newsletter, but we've got a really amazing writer lined up to take over. So my last newsletter will be September 29th. That's the day after our last podcast. And then the newsletter is not going anywhere. It will seamlessly transition to the new writer who's super funny, really exciting. And I just feel like it's going into the best hands possible.
Yes, yes. We are very, very, very grateful for that. And I'm so excited for you to get a break from doing that every single day. Damn, did y'all saw Mitt Romney yesterday and you were just like...
Yeah,
that 76-year-old.
I feel 80.
Right. Doing this job makes you feel old as hell.
Writing the newsletter every single day from the 2016 election on, it does make me feel like I'm 80 years old. I remember I did have to write it the day after Trump won, which I think I'm going to, before I leave, dig through my inbox and
try to find that one
because I don't even know what the hell I said. But I'm excited to have something else to do in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to start your morning.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm also making the decision to step away. You know, I started during the pandemic, like right in the middle of it, right before the election, as that was really crazy when we didn't know if Biden was our president for that week. And some people have still stuck with that same attitude. you know, it's been a crazy 3 years of me doing this, and I've just received so much love and so much like joy from being able to be myself and show up as who I am. And there have been moments where I might have felt like, oh my God, did I share too much? And getting so many sweet messages from from you has like really brightened my day in times that I really needed it. So I just wanted to thank everyone who's listening to this. Covering the news, like in the even the best conditions, can be really difficult. So yeah, it's just, it's not the easiest thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, I'm also just ready to do different things creatively. I've also got some really exciting, fun things in the pipeline. And I hope that, yeah, we can stay connected. You can follow me on, you know, Instagram and TikTok and everything, and, you know, show the same love and support and continue this community that we built. You know, it's a bummer, but happy for the times we had.
We have 2 more weeks left, and then yes, there will be lots of reflection. If you guys have specific questions that you've just had about the podcast, like DM us. I'm sure 75% of them we can't answer about guests and about things that we've gotten to do with this podcast. But we will obviously miss you incredibly. And I know this community is going to be so supportive of you and so lucky to have had access to you. And like you said, your intelligence and your empathy for as much time as they did. We'll get into all of this our last episode, but what we've done here is just really fucking special. And I'm so proud of you guys and excited to see what happens next. I'm also going to take a break from recording the podcast, but I'm not going anywhere. This podcast is going to take a break for the next few months to look ahead to 2024. It's going to be a massive year. And so, you know, we've never really taken a break. We've maybe taken like a 2-week break where we prepared episodes. So we kind of want to see what we can come up with if we take a beat, decide what the next iteration of this podcast is going to be, and make sure it can serve our listeners as well as this one has, which is a tall order. So we want to make sure that we get it right. I want to take some time to prepare and retool. So like I said, we're coming back really strong and ready for another unprecedented year in American politics. So please stay subscribed to this feed. Sammy and I will definitely hop on occasionally if there are massive news moments, like, you know, Trump gets COVID level. I think these days that's probably Trump is arrested. Who knows? We know anything can happen.
It could be unprecedented times, yeah, or precedented times.
Who knows? Yes. Biden resigns. We get our first woman president. There will be things that demand our presence in your feed. So a way to support us through this hiatus is to continue staying subscribed to that feed. Again, you're not going to get random episodes. You only get them if there's something newsworthy, but that's also where you're going to find announcements for when we're coming back. As I mentioned, we have 2 more weeks of these episodes left. We will wrap up for the year on September 28th. That's a Thursday. That will be Millie and Elise's last podcast with us and the last before our hiatus. And of course, rudely, we will have to unpack another GOP debate on our last show.
Yes.
So last housekeeping thing is that Dr. Kaday, she's going to share more with you about the future of Soft Black Women on her episode tomorrow, but it's very good and exciting things that make sense for that show, and you'll be excited to hear about it. But again, for the 45th time, Thursday, September 28th, will be our last show for the next few months, and we fully intend to come back pretty early next year, but we'll have updates on that sooner than, you know, we'll have some insights on what we're planning. So you guys will get plenty of lead time. And I'm curious about, you know, listeners that have DM'd with me over the years who have been consistently nice and supportive. Please let us know. Let me know what you want to see. Just say nice things right now. That'd be great. Yeah. But again, we will be back. We'll get into the rest of today's show. And we have a couple more amazing shows planned for you. So let's get to the main news.
Today's episode of American Fever Dream is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always afford the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you. It's Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for the season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Nuuly is a subscription rental service, and for just $98 a month, you get your choice of any 6 styles. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. You get fast, free shipping and returns and professional cleaning in Nuuly's state-of-the-art laundering facility. No laundry for you to worry about. This is the best. You just put it back in your box, send it out, and before you know it, you've got your next one. And you always have the option to buy what you love for sometimes up to 75% off. I bought the Rachel Antonoff pasta puffer from them. I was obsessed with it, like everybody who tries it is, and it was completely sold out everywhere else. So I felt like I really, really had an in there. So thank you, Nuuly. Nuuly is an amazing value at $98 a month for any 6 styles. And right now you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code FEVERDREAM20. Just go to Nuuly.com. That's Nuuly with 2 U's, and enter the code FEVERDREAM20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com. Nuuly with 2 U's with code FEVERDREAM20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes. Before we get into the main news, I did just see this headline and did not really have time to look into it. But did you guys see that People is reporting that Indeed, Jen Shah, and Elizabeth Holmes have become friends in prison?
Have I seen it? I shared a little TikTok with Elise about how Elizabeth Holmes attends Jen Shah's Shamazing Abs weekly class at prison and has become a motherly figure in Elizabeth Holmes' life, despite their 10-year age difference. And she has held and met Elizabeth Holmes' baby.
No way.
Millie, literally, moments before we got on, Millie sent me this TikTok that included all of that information, which I have actually... So I had watched Salt Lake City, and then I fell off. I hadn't watched the third season, but I've recently... strike times means there's not a lot to watch. Yeah, so I've recently gone back, been catching up. So Jen Shah is like looming large for me right now in general. So to see this, it's very interesting. I mean, I don't think that either woman would ever have given up the opportunity to like make headlines while in prison. Absolutely. So I'm sure that as soon as each of them realized the other one was going to be in jail with them, they were like, all right, we're going to have to make this friendship happen. But
for the content,
I wonder what this amazing app. I bet it's a good class.
I think, you know what? It was literally all of my suspicions of like, Jen's going to do really well in prison. Mm-hmm. She's and she is there community building, getting everyone on her side. She's helping women get GEDs. Like, she's really become the mayor of jail, which I knew that she could, because Jen may be a criminal. She may be a scammer, but you know what else she is? She's a girl's girl.
She is. That is true.
She's a girl's girl.
That is true. Even though her former assistant, who also was the FBI informant, says that she has talked shit about every woman she's ever met.
Listen, girl's girl doesn't mean you don't talk shit. Girl's that means that you're not going to choose a man over, but you're going to talk shit about everybody.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
I feel like Jen does, again, I'm watching season three right now, and I feel like she has the temperament for prison, which is, you know, self-motivated, girl's girl, like you said, but also hair trigger, completely erratic, frightening to others.
Which will work out. No one's going to mess with her.
Yeah.
She's going to, but she's going to do a lot of good, too. Like, you know,
I think she's exactly where she belongs for many, many reasons. It's funny because once you get to this season, Elise and Millie, did you watch the premiere? We'll get to politics in a minute. But the premiere, I think it's stunning. It's magic. It's art. It's beautiful. Just the music. It's okay, very, very good.
Because I don't like Meredith at all. So
no, me neither.
Meredith is tough.
Yeah, Meredith is tough.
She's going to be in the office next week, though. So I am going to go try to. I do want to see what she looks like. They always look so different in person in ways you never expect.
Like, they're all shorter and tinier.
They're also shorter, tinier. Their features are like very, very pronounced in unexpected ways. But yes, I'm glad that these two have found, have met kindred spirits in their time of need. Also, I mean, I guess before we get into the very brief impeachment news, we'll do another criminal, another incarcerated person update. They finally captured Danilo Cavalcante.
They did.
Wow. And they could not be prouder of themselves for needing 2 weeks and basically an entire military and a dog who did all the work.
I wonder if a dog, I thought it was multiple dogs, but yeah, it's just crazy. This guy had nothing, no money, no resources. He stole a gun. Like, I mean, Jesus.
Farmer's market peaches, we remember.
Like, peaches are juicier. I know we talked about it before, but I'm like,
it's worth repeating. It's worth repeating. He must have smelled terrible. That was my first thought.
Well, yeah.
Unbathed for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He's bathed. He's shaved. He's shaved.
That's true. Good point. Good point.
He's shaved and like,
he went to a Crunch Fitness or something as a guest.
Yes.
Use those Bliss products. Well, he is now incarcerated for the time being. We'll see if he can crab walk his way to another 2 week adventure. All right. For our main news, first up, I just fucking don't want to talk about impeachment ever again, but here we are. Kevin McCarthy announced an impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden. All week, I've been sort of like seeing this headline and then being to myself like, oh, I got to like figure out exactly what that means. Not much. They're just going to do the fishing expedition they've been on for 3 years now.
What exactly will this inquiry look into? So mostly unspecified and unverified allegations of abuse of power, obstruction, and corruption. If you feel like you have a loose grip on what they actually think Hunter Biden did in terms of like his connection, like in terms of Biden's connection to powerful people, you're right. There's nothing. Like, it's because there is no specific like smoking gun. Although right before we did start recording, he did get indicted on the other thing, but they're totally unrelated. Yeah. That's very important to know and tell your friends. Speaking of
smoking gun, he got indicted on that gun charge.
He got indicted on the guns and probably the taxes, but this has nothing to do. That's all his individual behavior. They are just desperate to establish any circumstance where Joe Biden inappropriately used his position to benefit his son financially. Even though the Trump Justice Department, they investigated this for like 8 months. This is exactly what Trump got impeached over. They found nothing. So does this mean that Joe Biden is going to be impeached? I mean, a scary fact is that all previously established impeachment inquiries have led to an impeachment. But, you know, many House Republicans, like, I feel like you kind of got them running scared yesterday because a lot of them were like, we're just looking into things. Like, we're not saying anything. We're just going to see what's going on. But I feel like even if they find nothing, they're never going to admit defeat. They're not going to go on TV and say like, oopsie daisies, we searched and searched and searched. Joey B's clean as a whistle. Sorry, no problem. I just feel like if they've opened this, they're going to like take it as far as they can. But Republicans in the Senate are telling their House colleagues, please focus on something else. I mean, they're literally saying that. Please focus on something else. We're not going to convict him. There's nothing here. Something they could focus on is funding the government, perhaps before the deadline at the end of the month passes and sends us into a shutdown, which means people would be furloughed and people would lose access to services. And with Republicans in charge of the House, that does seem, I would say 98% likely for at least a little while.
I'm just like loving this Republican Party who like is looking over who's benefiting oil and gas companies, trying to charge people for gun abuse, trying to call out let's keep this energy for literally the whole country and you will be the most popular fucking party on the planet instead of, you know, having to have people having strokes every second on TV.
Right. Do they hate Hunter Biden or are they jealous? Is it their envy?
That's honestly an excellent question. It's just funny, like, again, they're going to shut down the government over this useless situation. I do feel like this is kind of the bind that Kevin McCarthy is perpetually in, is like he has to do this impeachment inquiry because he is beholden to the absolute most fringe, crazy people in his party who have said, literally, we want to impeach Joe Biden. They don't have a reason, but they've said from day one, we won't vote on to fund the government unless the impeachment inquiry is open. Like, they're going to obstruct whatever business the House can get done in order to do this thing. I do wonder if, like, this will just be a thing where the inquiry is just kind of open forever and they never close it, because like you said, if they close it and say, oh, we didn't find anything, then they already look bad, but then they look really bad. But if they hold a vote and they can't actually impeach him because they haven't found anything, that also looks bad. So I wonder if it'll just be like there's technically an impeachment inquiry open into President Biden until the next Congress.
I had a Venmo charge. Like, I went on vacation on a girls trip with my friends and I had paid for something that was like really expensive. And that wasn't acknowledged when I got the Venmo charge from my friend. And I just let that sit there for 5 years in my little Venmo. I didn't decline.
Yeah.
I didn't accept. Me and that girl had a falling out. We're like friends again, but she had to dismiss that Venmo charge after 5 years.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's what's going to happen and all of that 100%. is a metaphor for what's going to go on with this impeachment.
Precisely. I hate it.
Yeah. It'll just be pending there for, I think that's a beautiful metaphor, Millie, is that it's just going to be a pending Venmo request.
You both kind of feel weird about it, but you're not really doing anything about it. I mean, asked about it the other day. I think Joe Biden was just like, I'm not thinking about it. I'm fine.
There's plenty of things to think about, Joe. There's a lot of things he's got to think about.
Plenty of things. All right. So we will update you on impeachment news when we have it, I guess. But next up in Maine news, Susanna Gibson is a Democrat running for the Virginia House of Delegates in a district just outside of Richmond. Now, these are incredibly competitive elections. We talked about them in our fall preview recently. And apparently for Republicans, literal sex crimes are fair game. The Washington Post, for some unimaginable reason, published a story about Gibson and her husband performing sex acts on camera for money. How did the Washington Post find out about this? A Republican operative brought the recordings and the photos to a reporter's attention. You can say no, like you can pass. Like I can't believe the Washington Post covered this. And I was like reading, I was reading the article where usually they sort of explain why they are covering something that people might be like, why are you doing this? And they never really had a good reason. I mean, the Daily Mail published it. It was going to get out. People knew. The Daily Mail has very, very specific, quote, reporting. It's just really sucks, especially because it's because a Republican operative who wants her to lose this election found out about this and shared the information with the media. So she and her husband, listen, much more people do this than I don't think anyone wants to talk about. She and her husband were on websites where they did sex acts for tips. A lot of people do this. You can make a lot of money.
The website was called Chatterbait.
Right.
Which did just make if they were on Chatterbait. I just, as I was writing the newsletter, I saw that and I was like,
and then the funny. Washington Post was like, they had this little aside where it's like, actually, it's against Chatterbait policy to do sex acts for tips. It's like, that's not the fucking, not her violation here. Like, okay.
It's called Chatterbait. Right. Yeah.
What are you talking about? Obviously, you're doing the sex act.
What are you doing? Like, these are fucking how these reading books work. On streams for tips?
Yeah. So my understanding is that they did this on a live stream that wasn't supposed to live in perpetuity, and they weren't aware that the streams were being recorded and redistributed on other sites.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm sure they knew it was a risk. I'm sure they knew it was a risk. It is. In Virginia, disseminating the videos, though, constitutes a violation of the state's revenge porn law. They have a specific law against this that I guess either the Washington Post or the Republican operative, I think the Republican operative that saved them, or maybe also the people that sent them or the people that recorded them. I'm not sure if Gibson is taking legal action, but she is moving forward with her campaign. She says she's not going to be intimidated by this. She said, my political opponents and their Republican allies have proven they're willing to commit a sex crime to attack me and my family because there's no line they won't cross to silence women when they speak up. And female elected Dems, especially some high ranking ones in Virginia, have rallied to support her, encouraging supporters to fight back against the really disgusting Republican tactic by donating to her campaign. I'm sure yesterday or this week was probably the best fundraising day she had. But like, it's just as women in the world to get these reminders that like, oh, wow, they can weaponize everything about us. And like that they just some guy was like, this is worth it to win a state level race in Virginia. I'm going to share images of a woman having sex with her husband.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me, like to wonder how this Republican operative like found out that this exists, like what was the path to that information? Though, like you said, I'm sure that these two people knew.
Maybe he's a Chatterbait user.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, a Republican operative is like watching the debate, and he's like, I recognize her. I've seen her. She's like kissing her husband at the end, and he's like, I know these two. Yeah. I mean, maybe
I paid them $25 to do that with their clothes off.
I mean, literally, exactly. But I do think it'll be an interesting test of like, I feel like for a long time we've talked about as millennials and younger people start getting into politics, like people who have sent nudes, who have engaged in online sex stuff, who have, you know, a record of sex, a record of whatever, any pick you can imagine, like, how is that going to play out as people become politicians and try to enter into politics? And like, will voters hold people accountable for that? How will voters take it? I think probably the trickiest thing, it shouldn't be, but I imagine the trickiest thing for the Gibsons is like this idea that like they were doing it for money and the accepting of tips. I feel like if it was just like images of them, maybe the Washington Post wouldn't have published it, or it would be a lot dicier. Yeah. But so it'll be interesting. I mean, I really hope that voters don't hold. I don't think that a person having sex with their husband on Chatterbait for tips precludes them from like coming up with zoning laws whatever the fuck. Like, she's also a nurse practitioner. I feel like that's more relevant to me as far as like having someone in government who is actually going to be making abortion related decisions, which is part of the reason why these like this election cycle in Virginia is so important. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how voters respond to something like this, because I feel like this is a thing that we've type of thing that we've known is coming down the pipeline for a long time, of like people with digital sexual histories getting into politics.
I don't know. I mean, I just don't think it's a big deal to have sex with
that. It's not a big deal. I did read the Daily Mail one, and it was designed to shame her, but I was like, good for them.
Yeah.
Man, to have two kids and many jobs, and you're still getting it on that much. It's like, honestly, our society would probably function better if more of our elected officials were just getting like well and properly laid more often. This is fine with me.
And also, there's an argument to be made of like, they're both people with careers and they still feel like they still have to do this shit for money because they can't afford to live. And like, there's a whole populist.
I don't know. Her husband's a lawyer. It might just be fun for them. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm like, but then they could have turned the tips off. And they got two kids.
No, for sure. You're right. You're right.
Childcare's expensive. I would have spun this so much. Yeah. You would have called me a DJ.
I mean, absolutely. We didn't have time today, but there's been some news this week that poverty has gone up in the last year because they refused to get, it was basically Joe Manchin and every other Republican refused to renew the child's tax credit, which had made poverty decrease, like giving parents just hundreds of dollars. So you know what, Republicans, if you're mad at this lady, she was probably just trying to make up the difference from the child tax credit you took away from her. Well, what do you want? What do you want? I mean, they're mad because she's pretty and she has a life and she's a woman who dares to like have a sexuality. And I actually feel like the fact that this isn't like, I mean, I know it is a national story, but again, we've been talking, this is, I feel like a broken record. I've said this on the past three shows, but I really think the media is getting a great deal better. Maybe not the media, but maybe audiences, where like, I do feel like at a different time, she would have been a huge, even a bigger joke, a bigger meme.
She would have been laughed out of the Democratic Party.
Exactly. She would have had to drop out of the race. There's I think even like 10 years ago, I don't think that she would have been able to say like, yeah, that's me. Fuck that. This is actually against our state's revenge porn law. I'm not going to be intimidated, all of that stuff. I just hope that it actually works and she's able to win her election. But I do think it is progress, just that like a woman can have something like this as a candidate and she doesn't have to immediately, drop out of the race and like leave. That she's like, she still is considered a viable candidate in the race, even with something like this, because I think most people really only care about a candidate's sex life if it reveals some kind of hypocrisy on behalf of that candidate. I know that's how I feel, is like I only would care about the sex, even like the worst Republican that I hate is having, if it was hypocritical to what they're advocating for.
Well, just two other points of thing that I feel like we've missed is, one, like, wasn't there like a Michigan some kind of local politician that like tied a woman up to a chair with tape, like,
yes,
and he was still getting fucking votes.
He didn't drop out.
And he didn't drop out, so there's that. And also, two, guess what, her husband's hot. So
do you think
she's hot too?
And she's hot. They're like in that same
couple.
Yeah,
he's not my. I wouldn't.
He's not my twist. But he's like,
he's no Joe Manchin.
No, well, girl. But it's also like,
he's a lucky guy. He's a good looking guy. His wife is getting laid on camera frequently, and they have an open marriage.
They're very Virginia. They've got it's a very Virginian look. They look like a suburban Virginia
like
couple.
Ostentatiously white.
He's like a hot, like Wore Abercrombie in high school kind of preppy guy.
They look like a couple that you'd find out maybe just in your friend group, like, oh, did you know that they did live stream? You'd be like, yeah, that tracks.
That tracks.
Absolutely. Good for them.
I'd be like, oh, what website was that? Let me just, and then, do you know their username by chance? I'll just kind of jot that down.
Well, I hope she wins, because if she wins, these races in Virginia are so competitive. So any win in the House of Delegates is going to be huge, and we will definitely be rooting for her. Next up, women's rights and women's wrongs. We've got a lot to talk about in this one today. We have two women in the wrong. One is disappointing. One is not. The first woman in the wrong, she's not in the wrong for voting against the rights of her sisters or undermining democracy. No, today we're discussing her failure to practice theater etiquette. I'm sure you've seen by now that Congresswoman Lauren Boebert was escorted out of a Denver performance of Beetlejuice, the touring Broadway performance, due to complaints that she and another patron were yelling, recording, vaping, and generally causing a disturbance.
Oh my God.
It's so many activities that they were engaged in when, like, just watch the musical.
Right? How could you even? I would be so distracted. I couldn't record and vape and have a conversation. Goodness. The 36-year-old representative, who will soon be a grandmother, will remind you. So she was warned at intermission to keep it down. A lot of people complained. It was not just like a couple people. Like, hey, a lot of people were like, what the fuck is going on
I'm
here?
I'm sorry, but like, you're attending white people. They do not want to hear any fucking noise. No. Which is true. I get it. But like, half of it is like, can you believe? And like, everyone turning
just
around.
Just like, looks their if necks. You're like, yeah, laughing at the parts where you're supposed to laugh in some,
yeah,
shows.
Exactly.
It's really making me laugh thinking about someone being like, God, someone behind me is vaping and singing and doing all this stuff. And then you turn around and it is Congresswoman Lauren Boebert.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That would definitely make me more. And like, I mean, this isn't the point of our podcast. We don't need to bring women down for what they wear, but just the tackiest Hervé Légère knockoff. So much jewelry, yeah, like statement necklace. She looked like she was 36, like 15 years ago. So people complained.
I mean,
they were warned at intermission. People were like, you need to keep it down. And they did not keep it down. I guess, in my head, I was like, I bet she was wasted. And I was like, maybe not.
Oh my God.
Maybe that's just her.
I think it's her. I think that she is lacking in decorum. I mean, just like, she was one of the people who screamed during the State of the Union. Like, she was probably just didn't catch her. She was probably vaping during the State of the Union too. Like, she doesn't know how to sit in an audience.
Did she call Marjorie a bitch, or did Marjorie call her a bitch?
Marjorie called her a bitch, and then when asked about it later, said she has been a bitch to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Bitches all around.
This is behavior of a bitch, and I also will say,
yeah,
Amanda, I hear your critiques about the fashions of people outside of New York City is a lot to handle. So, you know, yeah, I'll just say that it's giving like married at first sight,
mm-hmm,
fashions, mm-hmm, where I'm like, wow, this is what hot people wear in this city. That's, mm-hmm, interesting.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is giving Real Housewives in 2012, but
it is. Yeah.
I was going to say Bachelor Rose Ceremony, maybe circa 2014.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, maybe she should spend more time with Kirsten Sinema, who can give her some fashion advice.
Kirsten Sinema's banned from Charlotte Russe. And she's like a Charlotte Russe platinum member.
They did not keep it down, even though they were warned. Never forget. They were warned at an intermission, you need to be quiet. They didn't. Multiple people complained again. So the ushers asked them to leave. And there is security footage of this. I feel like the one I posted on SUP was misleading because I trimmed it a lot. But they had to talk to them for like 3 to 4 minutes before they stood up. They were refusing to stand up. The usher was like, I'll call the police if I have to. And they were like, go call them. Talk to the mayor. Do you know who I am? They were being really defiant about it. Until they eventually just sort of stomped off and did.
That poor usher.
Yeah, subjected another Denver institution to their presence.
Truly, like, I just can't. I just can only imagine that usher getting the complaints and realizing, like, I'm going to have to kick Lauren Boebert out of this fucking theater. And there's no world. There's no in the multiverse. There's not one instance of this where she acts normal about it. And like this is going to fucking suck so much.
Do you have anything in your wardrobe that approximates an usher? Because I feel like that's a video.
I mean,
the
truly,
usher contemplating
maybe
how to throw her out. No, terrible night for all involved. I do hope the rest of the patrons were able to enjoy the rest of Beetlejuice. She did confirm that she I don't think she confirmed she was like thrown out. I think her team confirmed that she'd missed the second act, I think is what they said. And she just said that she was guilty of singing and yelling too much, which is just simply not what you do in in the theater, I guess. Yeah. Not this one.
You know, honestly, I'll say this as a musical theater person and theater goer. The singing and yelling is worse to me than the vaping. Just because I
more feel disrespectful.
Like unless it's a flavored vape, and as long as you're not in front of me, I don't really... I guess it depends on, is she blowing huge plumes of smoke? Like, I need to know a little more what about kind her of vaping vape? Behavior. Yeah. Was she just taking a little sip, etc.? It seems like based on everything else, she was vaping wildly throughout the theater. So. But the singing, I think, is really egregious because you do go specifically to hear people who are good at singing, sing the songs. And Beetlejuice isn't a musical that necessarily everyone there, it's like the song, the music is like really, really pop. Like, it's not like fucking Lion King, where it's like maybe if people were singing along. I mean, you shouldn't sing along at the Lion King either, but like a huge musical where like the audience is going to know all the songs. For some people, there was probably the first time hearing the songs, and I don't know if they want to hear Lauren Boebert singing it. It's interesting that she was that she into knew, the soundtrack.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting
that she knew it before.
Patron of the arts, Lauren.
I'm also like, this is, does she not know the difference? Like, this is behavior of a concert.
Yeah. An outdoor concert.
An outdoor concert. Not an indoor theater.
This is this is the reason why I know people are really excited to go see the Eras Tour in a movie theater. That sounds like hell to me. A bunch of overly excited women, myself among them, just shrieking. I haven't seen the tour. I'm not going to hear anything. Anyway, that was that was my approximation.
The seats are, it's going to be 4DX when the seats like, the seats are going to rumble when it's like, yes. I love you. Ain't that the first thing you ever heard?
The worst thing, Millie.
Worst thing. I'm sorry.
It's wow. fine. I used to think she was
the
saying.
The Swifties swarm. Millie, we see them coming up Millie's apartment. They're coming through the windows.
Like, it's like The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, exactly.
Suddenly my eyes get gouged out.
I don't think any of us are disappointed by Lauren's behavior or surprised. No. This next one, though, is tough. So this has been a story throughout the week. We also haven't talked about the SAG or WGA strike for a minute. Drew Barrymore will resume operations on her daily talk show, which is bizarre because the Writers Guild is on strike and her show is a WGA struck show. She seems to be trying to appeal to the idea that this is more about more than her. I think what she's implying heavily is that like people need to get paid. Like I have staff, I have operators, I have people that are not necessarily on strike that, you know, do my show and need assistance. I'm pretty sure Kelly Clarkson is paying her people out of her own pocket. Like, I think a lot of very rich people are doing other things. Like,
Kelly Clarkson had a lot of people on her payroll, including her ex-husband. But continue. Yay.
The late night hosts are doing a podcast. Like, there are other ways. I think that there are people that are exploiting, whether she's doing it intentionally or not, the very real concern that people are not earning money right now. But, like, we all have to be in solidarity that that's the studio's fault. Mm-hmm. The studios did this, and she basically just sort of like throwing up her hands. She vowed not to promote any film and TV projects on her show and that she was going to stay in compliance with the SAG strike. But she's still, I mean, what is she going to do? Who's going to write what she says? Because I've heard that, you know, if you can do a show without writers, that's bad because it shows that the studios can do whatever they want. But does she have, are writers crossing the picket line or are non-writers creating cue cards? Or is she just winging it?
I think she's going to do... So, yeah, this was a whole discussion. There's a few different approaches. Well, first of all, people are like, they have writers. The show sucks. Like, anytime there's a monologue, any questions, any segments, that's all writers. And yeah. And if we're talking about Drew Barrymore, also Bill Maher's fucking bitch ass also is doing the same thing.
Just less surprising, but worth mentioning so that we're not just dunking on this lady. Bill Maher, I mean, it's okay to dunk on her.
He came out like later too, so that's why if they both said this in the same day. But a lot of ways that people get around like WGA is to make producers or the producer role have to do a lot of the writing, so that's going to be tricky. But from what my understanding is that it's not going to be like any monologues or segments like before. It's going to be a more stripped down, like basically the Drew Barrymore approach, like when she has these heartfelt interviews with her guest where they talk about like trauma. I think that like they're just going to make the whole show that, but it's also like those work because we did a bunch of fun, silly, lighthearted things so that people feel comfortable and disarmed by you asking intense questions. Also, it's going to be really interesting to see who comes on your show when they can't promote a TV show or this or that.
Like, just the fact that she's in non-compliance with the WGA strike, like, it's a bad look to go on the show in general.
And it's literally going to get, it's a, literally already picketed. So anybody who goes in is going to be crossing the picket line, which is, again, like a symbolic bad thing. And with Bill Maher, you know, he's basically cutting all of his segments, everything except for the panel. And then he's just going to do the whole show, that panel thing. So it's not ideal. It's just showing, like, but I heard, another podcast discuss that, like, there is this hunger to be seen and to be put out there by celebrities, that it's like, they've used the Renaissance tour to do it. They've used the U.S. Open.
I've never and it's seen, like, so many A-listers at the U.S. Open.
I know, but it's exactly that. It's like, they're not going to film festivals. They're not going to
go. Oh my God,
like,
they miss being perceived.
Some people miss being perceived, and it's like that ego being fed. So it's like, I'm sure on top of, and it's also like a self-important thing. And I think also friend of the pod, V, had a really great segment about how Drew Barrymore is trying to get, like, the broadcast news waiver kind of thing, because saying that her thing is news, but she's not Gail Tom, Gail or Gail King or Hoda or any of them. She makes fucking segments about candles and shit. Yeah. Like,
yeah, and it's also, I feel like there's something particularly crappy about Drew Barrymore doing this, because Drew Barrymore, as far as Nepo babies go, she literally comes from Hollywood royalty on top of Hollywood royalty. Like, her family goes back to vaudeville, like, stuff. Like, her great grandpa was, like, a vaudevillian,
oh my God,
like, star. So it's just like, she has one of the most, like, storied names in this industry, and if she really wanted to help, she started out, she like didn't do the MTV awards and stuff, and it's like, if she really wanted to help, she could do that by donating to a bunch of the emergency funds that exist right now for people. She could, I mean, she is one of the most well-connected historically people in this industry. She could probably do a lot behind the scenes that we don't even know, to work with these studios and work on these studios and try to figure it, like, try to actually go to the source of the problem, which is the fact that these studios now have actually lost more money than what is even being asked for.
Wow.
So it's just like, it's a bummer that she, as someone who is like, you know, her vibe is so empathetic and someone who is so beloved, that she can't really see the forest for the trees here. And I think she's like getting very like, oh, but if I bring my show back, these people will be immediately employed. And it's like, yeah, that is true. And I'm sure that like, as someone who runs a show, I imagine that does weigh on you, that you have employees who are not getting paid. But the real solution is to help end the strike, to actually end the strike in favor of the writers and actors, not to try to go around the strike so that your show can be on the air.
Right. Yeah. It's like, you don't know better than everybody else that is also in this very hard position. There are other people that are finding ways to generate revenue. Is there discussion of this lasting longer than people thought that could have motivated her? Like, what are people saying about the state of this?
I mean, my projection was always November, personally. I know that other people were saying Labor Day or by end of summer and stuff. And like, there are talks. Right. I mean, already there has been, everything's getting pushed back. Like, all these premieres and stuff are getting pushed back. But the reality of the situation is that the AMPTP has not presented, they don't counter. They've only had one offer so far on the table, and any other discussions have been, why don't you like this offer that we made? Not like trying to concession or like meet in the middle. So that's kind of like the mm-hmm. trouble is that the studios, and also something that I saw, which was in the latest WGA newsletter that was sent out, which is a really, really good point. And it's a point that we talk about a lot in politics. So come with me here on this ride. It's that the way that the AMPTP is set up is that because they're a union and they're all about profit, and their union is competitors, like all these competitors and people who have competing interests are in this union together. The way that something gets passed is by the person who's most stringent and least mm-hmm. flexible and all this stuff, like they have to bring them on board. So there have been a lot of, to be fair, there's been a lot of studios, a lot of people individually, even Netflix, even HBO, like they've been more flexible and they've been like, we're ready to meet you where mm-hmm. you are. But it's but because they can't do it, there are holdouts and they can't as a unit go through with what's happening. And I
so they you know, have a the Joe outline, Manchin.
They have a Joe Manchin. They have people who are like, no, we're not conceding with anything. And it's holding the whole AMPTP and like the way their contract works. So it is like causing disruption. And you know what you're saying? I know that on the, we haven't talked about it yet, but like on the thing about like how you see Adam Driver at the Venice Awards or this in the, or the Venice Film
Festival. I've seen so many mixed feelings about that. Like, seems like there's not consensus.
Well, there's independent studios that have met the demands that aren't in the AMPTP, and they do get a waiver because they have met the demands of the SAG and the WGA, which is like, if the movie does really well, they're going to pay them whatever, like all the stipulations, these smaller studios are meeting. So technically it's okay. But of course, other people are saying like, well, Adam Driver shouldn't be there anyway, because now he's making it look and like, why are we all getting waivers and this and that, which is also a good, interesting point. But it is a little bit more, it's not as like malicious or whatever as like, I'm going to bring back my whole show. Mm-hmm. Like nothing happened.
Yeah, she didn't get a waiver to do that. Yeah.
No, she's not going to get a waiver because her writers are standing outside mm-hmm. of the fucking studio and picketing saying that they are out of work. So it's different than Adam Driver with an independent movie studio being like, hey, they're going to pay all this stuff. They're doing this and we're going to do it this way.
Yeah, I keep wondering because I feel like the big one that people talk about that have gotten waivers and that is meeting all the SAG demands is A24 mm-hmm. Is like kind of, I feel like A24 is like a big little studio. Like it's technically an indie studio, but it's meeting all of the demands of SAG. So A24 and people we even know who have A24 movies are allowed to promote their work. So I'm kind of wondering with this, like, because there has been a lot more talk that it's like individuals, some studios that are part of the AMPTP are willing to move more and some aren't. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if we're going to end up in a situation mm-hmm. where like piecemeal different studios start meeting the demands and then other ones like work starts being struck for like only. And I'm saying these mm-hmm. names not knowing that they're like mm-hmm. actually the ones, but like, let's say like if Netflix is the holdout, then maybe it's like suddenly it's only Netflix that's struck or only HBO that's struck or whatever. Like, I'm just wondering if it's going to get to that place, because another thing that I've heard the comedian Adam Conover talks a lot about the strike and has been like really, I think he is a WGA negotiator. And one of the things that he said that I thought was interesting about the AMPTP is that the AMPTP is more like a middleman organization. So the AMPTP, like SAG has the authorization to make deals on behalf of the actors. Mm-hmm. That's what the union does. But the AMPTP does not actually have the authorization to do that. They have to like hear what SAG is saying, go back to all the studios, talk to all the studios, get what they're saying, come back. So really the only thing the AMPTP has the authorization to do is say no in the room. And then they can like go back and talk to everyone. And so that's also part of the reason why I think this is taking so long. The holdouts mean so much. It's so piecemeal because like the AMPTP is not a union in the same way SAG is a union. And their only real the only thing they're really authorized to do is put forward that one deal that they keep putting forward, like Millie said, and then just say no to stuff.
Yeah, that does. I mean, what you said sounds like it could be the way it evolves, especially since it's really stretching. I mean, I feel like we are starting to notice the pinch of the lack of content. Like, obviously, at Betches, we get a lot of like pitches about like upcoming reality shows, and they're doing them. There's one they're doing at MTC. It's an all-star shore. So it's not just Jersey Shore, but there will also be castmates from Warsaw Shore and Germany Shore.
Okay.
And Geordie Shore.
I mean, so when I was in Colombia and I saw Acapulco Shore, I was like,
Rio Shore.
Rio Shore. So that's going to be crazy.
You're going to be seeing like all stars of every single reality show you've ever heard of. All right, next up, are men okay? Big one today. Tim Scott, if you don't know, is the Republican senator from South Carolina, and he's also running to win the GOP nomination for president. There's been a slow drip of articles in the past few months, especially pointing out that he's a 57-year-old Republican man who has never been married. And for the party of traditional values, some people have some questions about that. This conversation kind of broadened and I think entered more of the mainstream when the Washington Post published a story this week investigating Tim Scott's campaign trail claim that he does have a girlfriend. This article is literally like investigating whether this girlfriend is real. So a Republican operative, like there's funny. Like a clip of Tim Scott on the news saying like, oh yeah, I have a girlfriend. And a Republican operative, these fucking Republican operatives like can't stop spilling the tea. Can't keep their mouth shut. But this one against one of his own tipped the reporter off to the fact that Scott's girlfriend he discusses may not exist. Right now, Tim Scott is claiming to have a conservative Christian girlfriend whose privacy he's protecting by not introducing her to the public. When asked how they got to know each other, he said from talking about God and using a Bible study app together. That's how it got hot and heavy.
And she lives in Canada and she, yeah, can't, she goes come to another here.
School.
And they met at camp, but they send letters and her camera, she can never turn her camera on because her computer is broken. But
and she doesn't have vacation days, so she can't meet.
All of those must be tough. The Washington Post reporter, Ben Terrace, he seems super familiar with Scott. I think he's covered him for a long time, as well as Scott's earlier claims around romantic relationships have kind of never added up, it sounds like. For instance, Tim Scott has long promoted abstinence until marriage, but he's 57. I guess like the reporter like straight up asked him, are you a virgin? And he kind of like demurred and said that, well, he still believes sex before marriage is a sin and that he wished, quote, we all had more patience, which to me means he is having intercourse as a 57-year-old man, as you would expect. So some commentators have noted that, you know, treating a person's, I saw a lot of responses to this throughout the week. Treating a person's unmarried status as like suspect, it does feel icky. It does feel discriminatory. Well, Scott says his opponents for the GOP nomination are raising the red flag basically because they're threatened by his polling numbers, which have never really gone above 2%. When the Washington Post looked into the alleged girlfriend, the outlet couldn't verify that she exists. I don't know how you can verify anyone exists if you don't have their name, though, but 6 of Scott's friends said they don't know anything about her. But then he's got this campaign manager that says he did hang out with her at a zoo. Which all of this is too specific. Like, no, we hung out at a zoo. Met her on a Bible study app. Like, it's all too on the nose. So Scott's single status, I think it's in the news because I guess it's like spooking donors who worry about how it could impact his chances. And of course, who are probably wondering the same thing everyone wonders about the other unmarried South Carolina Republican senator, who is Lindsey Graham.
So I didn't even realize that twins. It's two bachelors for South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And Lindsey Graham, people have some theories about why he is not married to a woman specifically. So all of this begs 2 main questions. Does Tim Scott have a girlfriend, number one? And 2, does it matter?
I think it matters to Republicans for whatever reason. It doesn't matter to me if Tim Scott has a girlfriend, but it is funny for him to be saying that he has a girlfriend and not have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
That is very funny.
Yeah, that's real. I think it is just, again, like Elise was saying earlier, like when you have politics that contradict. And I mean, a good example is one of the young, hot Democratic rising stars is Cory Booker. And he's 54 and he is not married. Mm-hmm. Rosario Dawson just broke up with him like a year or two ago. You know what I mean? And so I don't think like it is just like because he's a Republican. I'm sure he, you know, I think he is anti-choice, like anti-choice, like anti-abortion. You know, it's all these things. Yeah. Like, so it's like, of course, you know, and he probably says abstinence and all this shit, but it's like, yeah, you're 57. Like, physically and humanly, it's not possible for you not to have sex. Like, so it's a natural instinct that people
he's
can't
not want a bad looking guy.
And
so.
He's not
a,
Joe and Tim.
I'm
Joe
just
and
saying,
Tim.
There I'm are kidding. Some heinous looking senators, and I wouldn't put him in among them.
No, fine. But I'm just saying, like, it's like, we don't care, but the policies he does has set him up for people to ask these questions because the Republican policies and politics are all about getting in other people's fucking business. Mm-hmm, so if you want to get in other people's fucking business and share live streams and do whatever, and what bathroom are you in, and does your daughter have her period and all this shit, then yeah, we're going to ask about your fucking girlfriend and that no one has fucking met. Except for your campaign manager, somebody who is literally on your payroll, who says you hung out with her at the zoo.
Who will be choked in the newsletter. Seemed to look mysteriously like Tim Scott in a wig. And they were never seen together.
Girl, please.
Oh, man. I do enjoy this storyline.
Also, you know what? Tim Scott should have his own little Republican bachelor. And people would watch that and it would probably make him more popular and relatable.
Come on, Tim Scott. Get on the right choice and find a gal. Or, I mean, according to him, he has found the one. He is just protecting her privacy.
Mm-hmm. Just like Jenna Lyons.
Exactly like that. Exactly like that. That is our show for today. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaris.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com.
Betches.